Welcome back to Game On, where every season is our season. Here's Wes Moore.
Welcome back inside the Razorback Campersville Studios. Glad you're with us. Let's head out to the hotline and bring in Nate Allen. Nate joins us on the Fidelity Communications Hotline. Nate, welcome to the show. How are you?
Doing fine, Wes. How are you?
I'm good, man. I appreciate you jumping on board. I wanted to pick your brain about Coach Borrells, his legacy. You know, we were just discussing, and there's no doubt he's one of the most influential sports figures in the state of Arkansas, probably the most. But I think you could throw that into anything. The most influential person in Arkansas history. That's how powerful he was, not just in sports only.
No, I mean, Frank Borrells spanned so many areas. I mean, you think of even down to the end of his life with the Alzheimer's playbook. A broadcaster did ABC, was on the night, and that was when the next game of the week was national. I mean, there were very few broadcasts on. He and Keith Jackson were legends, together on ABC. As a fundraiser, as a coach, as an athletic director, he absolutely was a man of many, many talents and tremendous vision. I think Bill Gray said that, who had played quarterback and defensive back from 62 to 64, and then later was associate athletic director. And he just said that the vision that he could see things that other people never even, not only could see, but never even dreamed about, and that Frank could see him and could make them happen. And just always was so much ahead of his time. Loved the state of Arkansas. I thought that was the biggest key to his success, is that he never lost sight of why he wanted to come here. And it was back like in 1947 or 8. He was an assistant at Baylor, and they played in Fayetteville. And he, from the day he saw the night when they got in, and he saw every storefront had Razorback stuff in it, he said, "This is where I want to be a head coach." And even when he was at Missouri in 57, that was a good job. But when Arkansas called, it was, "Barney, what took you so long?" he never lost sight of that. Never lost sight that relationships are what built this program, that money is absolutely secondary. Money comes with relationships and fundraising, but that establishing that and continuing to have the entire state behind the program was the key to everything. And Frank Borrells never lost sight of that.
Nate, I heard so much yesterday about his personality, his charisma, the way he worked a room. You meet a good football coach, they have that. Because they're recruiters, they got to be like that. That personality just comes out. What was his personality like when he was talking about preaching about the Razorbacks?
Well, I thought that really it was always optimism. I thought Orville Henry wrote it best. He wrote that if Frank Borrells would run out of town, he'd think he was leading a parade. And that optimism was infectious, and the enthusiasm was infectious. And he just made people believe. And even he had a knack where even when not every season was a great one. I got here for his last four seasons when he was coaching from 73. The 73 through 76, and he only had one great year of the four. I was 75 when they went to the Cotton Bowl and won the SWC. But even in hard times, he made people believe, and he made people believe in the program and that things would be all right, that things would get done. And he had that Georgia accent that he never lost, but it was so effective. And he was, I think, a big thing, like we talked about with Frank, was his ego. The deal is that, about being the guy who would be run out of town and think he was leaving the parade, because unlike some with a big ego, Frank's ego was such that he wasn't afraid to hire the best people and surround himself with the best people and take input from the best people. And now he would clash with egos. I mean, because he would hire people with big egos. Let's face it, he and Lou Holtz, Nolan Richardson, Eddie Sutton, even Ken Hatfield, his ego you don't think is that great. But every good coach has to have a strong belief in himself and a stubborn streak of their own. And they didn't always mesh the whole way, but every mistake Frank Royal's ever made was made wanting Arkansas to win and wanting Arkansas to succeed. And I thought that was, you know, the true measure in the end. That's why, in most cases, any, you know, the fences were mended, you know, long after the fact. Lou Holtz came back and just was for the Hall of Honor induction and just basically said he owed everything to Frank Royals, that the Notre Dame job, the Minnesota job, that, you know, that that wouldn't have been possible without Frank Royals and what Frank did for him at Arkansas. And I thought, too, as far as I know he gets a lot of credit, as he should, for guiding Arkansas into the SEC, and everyone talks about his vision. But frankly, I think Ray Charles could have seen that as a better move, that, you know, in the shape that the Southwest Conference was in. But the thing that the remarkable achievement of that was that Frank had the program in such shape that the SEC would want it, that it was a fantastic all-around program that the SEC knew would fit, be competitive, draw fans, and you know, bring honor to the league. And Frank got his blueprint from John Barnhill, who was the athletic director who hired him, about, you know, the Razorback clubs and expanding that, and certainly the keeping the state unified. But he had the vision to expand. Basically, Arkansas was a football program, and everything else was just to kind of keep football going. I mean, the baseball program, Norm DeBryan was working for the PE department as much as baseball when Frank got the job as athletic director after George Cole retired. And Frank did things, you know, I mean, you look at the success that baseball's had under Norm DeBryan and Dave Van Horn. That's certainly track with John McDonald. People forget that was not just an instant hire, because at the time, Arkansas State had a great coach, Guy Cotchell. And there are a lot of people who thought that Arkansas should go hire him when Frank decided it was time to really expand in the track. But John was here as a grad assistant track and head cross country coach, and he immediately saw, you know, enough in John, and, you know, 42 national championships later, and I think he made the right call. You also, I thought the biggest thing another huge thing he did was basketball and the vision he had. Because basically the Southwest Conference almost had a gentleman's agreement of basketball was what you did to fill between football and spring football. And yeah, you wanted to be competitive in it, but if you didn't make it beyond one round in the SEC, in the, you know, conference, in the national tournament, and only one team went, that was basically it. I mean, the sooner you could pack up and get ready for football. And he hired Eddie Sutton, and that forced Texas to hire Abe Lemons. And then Houston coming into the league, and Southwest Conference basketball got damn good under the end of that stretch. And then, of course, hiring Nolan Richardson as the first black head coach really in the South of any major, you know, at any major school or any, you know, Division I school of a major sport. And the success that was, you know, went from there, and building things, you know, Walton Arena, the stuff was built. Now, Nolan's success obviously built it, but Frank had to approve it. Frank had to, and you know, it was so instrumental in how it was built, how it was laid out. I know Norm DeBryan told me yesterday about Baum Stadium and just how, you know, they had talked about expanding George Cole Field or building another stadium, and that Frank kind of slow played it. And now he said, now Norm, you know, realized why, because he had a vision for Baum Stadium, and he said he did things. When he toured the country looking at other ballparks, he saw things that nobody else had, and that's why even today, Baum Stadium is still the best baseball park, college baseball park in the country. And all of that really is the vision that Frank Royals had.
We're talking with Nate Allen. He joins us on the Fidelity Communications Hotline. Nate, take me to the transition period when Coach Royals was going from head coach to AD. Did everyone... Was it just assumed he would do a fantastic? Did you guys know? What was the feeling back then when that was all happening?
Well, he was actually doing both jobs. I believe George Cole retired in 1972 and stayed on as athletic director emeritus, and he had been the longtime aide to John Barnhill, and then Frank became AD in 73. So he had his last four football seasons. He was both athletic director and head football coach, which was very common at the time. And you had Daryl Royal and the did that. A whole bunch of you know, especially the powerful football coaches did that. And Frank, I mean, everybody knew Frank would do a great job because he already was, and he had already hired Eddie Sutton as athletic director. And so yeah, that was a no brainer. And obviously the way Lou Holtz's first, going 11-1 and beating Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl, it sure looked like he could pick a football coach, and he already was raising funds, and so there really, that was never an issue. Everybody knew he'd do a great job. I don't know if anybody thought he would still be doing it in 2007, but the people he brought in, really his first hire shows the kind of inner confidence he had, because he hired Wilson Matthews, who was a high school legend at Little Rock Central, and really considered him a contender for the job that Frank Broyles got when Jack Mitchell left for Kansas. That was his first hire, and they were as great a duo, whether you call it good cop, bad cop. I mean, Wilson was just kind of the opposite of Frank, real rough-edged darky who players loved and the state loved, and Frank was big enough to realize what an asset that was, and the two of them worked together just beautifully. Between Frank had the syrupy smoothness to smooth things over, and Wilson the drive to get things done when the dirty work. He was on the football staff. If somebody needed to run extra laps or get disciplined, Wilson was the guy. And that kind of kept Frank above that, which was, just the way he did things.
We're talking with Nate Allen. He's on the Fidelity Communications Hotline. Nate, real quick, football-wise, I know the team met. We had a lot of defensive players yesterday. Josh Liddell back in the starting lineup. You had Dre Greenlaw back out there. The defense, do you sense it's starting to, get a little bit more shape to it with Dre getting back out there?
Well, that's a huge thing to have Dre Greenlaw out there. And, to get him back gives them a real force, a guy who's been there and made plays. Of course, we didn't actually see the 16 plays he was in there. That was before those open to the media. But by all reports, including his teammates, Dre did very well. And looks like he's going to be ready. I think there's actually been kind of a blessing in disguise for him, because the fact that Dre couldn't practice this preseason, or was very limited this preseason, they found that they got a jewel in Grant Morgan that they have up, even though he's a walk-on, that guy can play, and that he can, if Dre needs a breather, that's been a big problem. The last couple of years you had Dre Greenlaw and Brooks Ellis just playing to exhaustion, or until Dre would get hurt, and then Scooter Harris would come in and play to exhaustion. But I really think now they got a little depth. And Grant Morgan and possibly D. Walker and Giovanni LaFrance showed they could help out at inside linebacker. And you always got Dwayne Eugene as kind of the Swiss Army knife of the linebackers, because he's right now a backup outside linebacker, but he can play in. He's played all four linebacker positions. So they've got some times where they won't maybe just have, guys just with their tongues hanging out in the fourth quarter, like obviously what happened against Missouri and against Virginia Tech.
Nate, I've heard that before, but it seems like the coaches preach, we need depth, we're going to play more guys this year, get some guys some rest, but it hasn't happened in years past. You think we're going to see it this year?
That's a good question, because that is the game they always talk about, and there's always a big, so-and-so's looking real well. And then the game comes and they don't pull the trigger. So we'll see. Now, they've certainly, you would like to think that they could play their second team in this first game against Florida A&M. And it'll be interesting to see if they do. But I do know, too, you got two huge games after that with TCU and A&M. And I can see why, the coaches go, I don't know if I want to put in a second teamer here. But I do think at least that they know with Grant Morgan, if somebody gets hurt or if somebody really is needing a breather, I don't think they'll hesitate to put him in.
Nate, great stuff. thank you as always. Appreciate you making some time out today to join us on the show. Have a great day. Have a good lunch. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Wes. Thank you.
Thank you. Nate Allen joining us on the Fidelity Communications Hotline.